Well, it is Rome.
Wow.
All right, you're listening.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's fear of things going bump in the night?
This presentation brings you head first into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central, and give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world go to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do.
Welcome to another episode of UFO of the Cover. I hope y'all are enjoying the music. I know it's not a usual intro. We pretty much starts right into it. But we are doing a couple of unusual things this evening, so I just want everybody to know that. Guys and girls, you know, every week I say this, I love doing the show. I always have such a good time coming and doing the show on the weeknights. Wednesday night I think is a great time to do this. It's hump night. Everybody's, you know, getting ready to start headed towards the weekend. So it's fresh in everybody's mind when they're out over the weekend. They can talk to their friends about some of the stuff they've heard here or learned or disagreed with or agreed with, for that matter. Because there are a lot of things that get discussed in the show every week. And actually now we're, 10 years now? 500 plus shows? Yeah, 1,000 hours. UFO on the Cover and Wake Up USA, I have more than 1,000 hours of research and broadcast for anybody who wants to listen to it absolutely free. I know, isn't that amazing in itself? Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have some special people with us tonight. We've actually been working on a new series because, you know, we've been doing a lot of things these days where the organization itself is putting things in series and then putting them on the radios for everybody to hear them. And it's kind of, instead of having to sit down and write it this way, everybody gets to hear it. It's easier and more available. And I know a lot of people like to read, and I don't want to take that away from anybody, because a lot of people do, but frankly, it's easier for me to download an archive to my iPod or my CD player or burn it to a disc and pop it in my car while I'm driving or plug it into my phone and listen to it that way. I mean, unfortunately, we are in the modern era, and it's a lot easier to deal with this kind of stuff. And it's just easier to assimilate the information this way. This way, everybody gets to hear it or see it or be experience it. And I think really and truly it reaches a lot more people. I noticed just today in the United States, Newsweek magazine decided that they're no longer going to be a subscription magazine, paper magazine. They're going to go strictly electronic. So you see where the world's headed. Mary Rodwell was going to be with us, and I'm going to have her introduce herself in just a minute. But, Yasha, and by the way, if you're a regular listener to my show and you don't know who Mary is, shame, shame on you. That's 50 lashes. Okay. But I'm going to go ahead and introduce a friend of mine and a director of Eyes and someone who keeps me very busy with a lot of new stuff that we're working on is A.S. Most of y'all should know her. She's done two shows with us now that she should be totally familiar with you. So, A.S., how are you doing this evening?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Hello, Mary. Hello, Joe. Very happy to that both of you have come together for this subject tonight. It's going to be fascinating and very informative. Thank you.
Well, you know, I've been looking forward to this trilogy a long time. You know, the reality of ET and contact and children is something that really, you know, very few researchers in this field have broached, to be honest with you. With the exception of Mary and maybe one or two others, really only one other, it's a subject that really, for some reason, it has become a little taboo, something I want to talk about as we go. But, A.S., why don't you introduce Mary for us?
Well, first I'd like to say, of course, we already know that I appreciate Joe's work because we've done multiple shows and I'm working for the organization. But, Mary, I've been following your work for now, and I have to say that it resonates on a very deep level. As an experiencer, for me, it really resonates. And I just feel your perspective is a very warming to an experiencer, very soothing. And I feel you have an enlightened perspective on the whole phenomena. And I'd like to thank you for the love and the integrity you've put into this work for all this time. I'm sure you've touched the lives of many experiencers already, and so I want to thank you first. And then I would like Mary to, if you could, you know, present yourself a little bit, tell us about your history, how you got into this field, because we aren't born into this field, okay? It's like we all come into this field with sometimes very strange circumstances. And so I'd love to hear about your history a little bit and your organization, ASTERN, and, of course, all the wonderful things you've discovered from working with these people and these experiencers and these children. Please.
Well, good morning from Australia, and it's a beautiful sunny morning here in Queensland, and I want to thank Joe and UAS for being so wonderful in the opportunity to share more of my work, because I know you understand that so many people around the world are really isolated and often frightened because they think it's just them, especially when it seems to involve their children. This is hugely confronting when you think, well, my children are having this too, what can I do? So there's isolation, there's fear, and there's, you know, this sense of, you know, the lack of information out there, and often information that's fear-based, as we well know, because the fear is coming from the unknown. The fear is, you know, having limited understanding. So for me to have an opportunity to share a little bit more about what my research is showing, which and a little bit more about ASTERN. My background is nursing midwifery to begin with, and I never believed, you know, nearly 40 years ago now, that this would lead me into traveling the world talking about extraterrestrials and, you know, the whole phenomena. This, you know, I would have found quite bizarre 40 years ago. But I ended up going into counseling, and from that I gained a great deal of experience in terms of human, you know, the general human experience, if you like, of living with one another on this planet and relationships, etc. And also what was real for me was doing grief and bereavement, because people often had unusual experiences after a profound grief, and they would have maybe strange things going on, perceive something unusual, something in the room when they've lost someone close to them, maybe smelling the fragrance of mum after she passed away and thinking they were going crazy. So that was a really interesting area for me in terms of understanding there's so much more than our third dimensional reality accepts as being real. And this, I think, was a preparation, if you like, for me, that when I went into a private practice, that was the, you know, again, I was meeting people that were people we would call psychic, seeing things that other people don't see, seeing energies, connecting or seeing spirits, you know, all this kind of thing was coming to me, and I found this really, really fascinating. I was also exploring the area myself in metaphysics, where I was, you know, exploring healing, energy work. I found myself very drawn to this area of research. And I always think, you know, when you're ready, things present themselves to you. And what presented themselves to me was somebody walking through my door and saying, "Mary, I've heard you're open-minded. This is happening to me. Everybody..." And from that, what was fascinating was he began to tell me about his own experiences, which were being taken up on spacecraft. His partner was having experiences, waking up with marks on his body, shaved areas on his leg. And it was also, and he said, "I've got nowhere to go. My partner's traumatized. The Reddies think that there's demons in the house, so they won't come near the house." And this was really in my face. And what was fortunate or synchronous, and all of those of you that know how we're led into things, I'd only in a few months previously read the book by Dr. John Mann, for some of you will know, wrote the book Abduction, and he was a professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, so you can't get more credible than that. And he had written this book Abduction about human encounters with extraterrestrials, and in it he's saying, you know, this is real. And this was profound for me and very valuable, given my first client that walked in the door. From that time, I met a young, thought she was going crazy, because one day she saw three beings in her lounge room and thought it was just her. And it wasn't until a friend walked and knocked on the door and came in and said, "Well, do you realize there's three strange beings in your lounge room?" that she realized it wasn't just her. I teamed up with her. And basically, from that, we started the first abduction support group. I know this is a bit of a preamble, but it will give you an idea of how it unfolded for me. And from that, and meeting her, who was, as I said, fully aware of how to think from a psychological perspective, 12 people from the first advertisement, which was huge for me, because I thought this was very, very rare, 12 people in a place like Perth, Western Australia, where there's only 1.5 million population, is a big percentage. And what I then decided to do was, well, I need to get more so I got in touch with ASET in America, the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists. From that, I realized that professionals were taking this seriously, and there was also Dr. John Mack's organization as well. And from that, I decided that someone had to start a professional resource in Australia, and that is how ASCERN really was born, and that's the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network. I wanted to offer professional support, but support that was honoring of what we call other realities, because so many people around the world are experiencing things that are outside the box of what is considered consensus reality, and that's really the beginning of ASCERN. And 2,000 clients later, from all over the world, from Japan, South America, you know, Alaska, Finland, you name it, Russia, I get calls or I get emails with people saying, "This is happening to me, it's happening to my children, et cetera, et cetera." And so what I'd like to do today is to give you some short stories of at least three cases, one in Australia, one in the UK, and one in the US, that's actually going on, and one in Europe, to give you some idea of the reality for the parents with children with these experiences and how these children have come, as they tell me, to assist with the awakening of us as a species. As one little nine-year-old in Northern Europe, through an interpreter, tells me, everyone's sleeping. They have got to wake up, and we're part of helping to wake them up. So I hope that's a good preamble into what we're going to do this morning.
Well, I actually think it's excellent, and people need to know, because, you know, since we're doing this as a three-part series, people really need to know who you are, how you got involved in this. You know, ASCEND is one of the few organizations that we actually endorse, so, you know, you've been knowing me for a while, so you know I'm kind of selective, but it's hard because, you know, I'm looking for people out there who are doing legitimate research now. We know there's a few in here. I know you're down there, so anytime I want to talk to you, I know a couple in New Zealand, but quite a few in Europe these days, but still, it's tough going. It's just tough. But let me ask you something, Mary, while I'm thinking about this, before we go any further. When you contact other researchers and other people in the field, I mean, do most of them embrace what you have to say and are glad that you're contacting them, or do you get that kind of snotty, snooty kind of reply? I'm just curious.
It's a good question, Joe, and I get some really positive results from some researchers. So what I have found is with the nuts and bolts researcher, they struggle with my material because I don't just take it into what we call, you know, the third dimensional tangible. You know, if you can touch, feel it, smell it, then it's real. Anything outside of that's not real. What I have done due to my training in psychology is that experiences are real despite the fact that you can't prove them in, you know, by bringing that evidence of an experience. The evidence is in the person. The evidence is in their change of awareness, the way that they change by their experiences. To me, that's the evidence of the reality. And because I take it into the area of what we call the spiritual dimension, which we can't help but do, because after these experiences, people change. They change incredibly in terms of their perspective, the way they view the world. And that is the tangible falsehoods out there that want, you know, really for us to keep this within the recognized scientific paradigm. So I'm always trying to marry what the experiencer tells me with tangible, physical, scientific evidence as much as possible so that I can demonstrate this isn't airy-fairy, this isn't fluffy, this isn't just people fantasizing or imagination. This is real. But again, there'll always be those that find this too challenging.
I agree. There's a lot of them out there that seem to have a hard time grasping a lot of this. I've been really fortunate because I've run across a lot of good people, but I have to say it's tough, you know. And once we started, you know, it was hard to me too. It was hard for me as a person to start into children and hearing children because I didn't believe them or anything else. It's just such a touchy subject to be talking with someone under the age of 18, especially in the United States. Because it can end up in all sorts of disasters. But after meeting enough friends of mine and contactees I was working with and families I was working with, because, you know, we track several six-generation families now and several five-generation families now, so it became important to know what they were saying. Because, you know, when you have the great-great-grandmother and the great-great-granddaughter, it gives you a very unique way of looking at how all this plays out. And I got to say, it's taught me a lot. But then, you know, the other day I've been talking with AS, and I know, you know, she has a child, and she talks about a lot of this stuff, and it's a tough thing, man, to raise a child and know what's going on and to experience. It's hard to make people understand that, you know, you're a contactee and your child's being taken too. So, and a lot of people, and now you can address this, but a lot of people don't understand why the parents don't get mad. And after that, I want you to tell us about a couple of cases, but I really wanted to get your opinion on that. Because, you know, I get a lot of flack because a lot of people say, oh, well, those parents are cold. They didn't really care that their child was being abducted. Well, I don't find that to be true. I find the parents, in some cases, to be very upset because of their child, but then in some cases, because they know they seem to be all right. What have you found over the years?
Well, first of all, I mean, what you're saying, Joe, is very, very important. Yes, it becomes very touchy when you start talking about young children having experiences. And I had one blog written against me saying, you know, Mary influences children and what have you. What people need to understand is the parents come to me with not only their own experiences, but their children's experiences. And any child that has talked to their mother or father or spoken to me, it's always been conscious recall where they brought the child to me and we talked about what's going on with the child. And one of the cases I'm going to talk about is an 8-year-old boy I'm going to call Paul. I remember when Paul told me that, because I said to him, you know, when he came, I said, you know, how do you feel about all of, you know, what are you most afraid of? And he said to me that I'm going crazy. Now, remember, he's only 8. When he started to talk about himself and going up on the spacecraft and being in pods where they can't move, and I said, do you know what was happening? And he said, yes, that's our yearly medical exam. And I said to him, did you ever talk to your school friends that were with you on that experience? And he said, no, because Mum stopped me. And his mum was in the room, and she said to me apologetically, yes, she said, I had to stop him because if he'd gone to school and talked about this, he would be seen as very different. And that would have made it, you know, this makes it very hard for children when they're seen as different. And he said, you know, and the mother said to me, you know, I was really angry when I discovered it wasn't just me, and she'd had experiences as a small child where she had been adopted, and she was adopted by a Christian family. And when she started to talk about her experiences, they got so angry with her and told her that if she talked any more about them, that they would send her back to the orphanage. So she was terrified when she realized that her son, who was doing amazing drawings that she saw, really represented and triggered her. She said, I was very angry, Mary, to think that they were taking my child. And she was saying this in front of Paul. And Paul pipes up quite spontaneously, but Mum, I don't mind. So she said, I know you don't mind, she said, but I do. And it was really interesting to see his perspective against her perspective. And this is a really interesting part of this, is that often, you know, this is a very interesting dynamic where the child is very comfortable, but the base fear that they had. And he was really grateful to his mum when she saw what was going on and she asked him about his experiences. His answer to her was, do you mean I'm not going crazy? Because poor soul, that was his biggest problem, was being on his own and not talking about it and not knowing. This was what he was fearing, that he was going crazy. And my point is to parents, don't be afraid to approach this with your child, because to be honest, they need to know that they're not going crazy and that this is okay and that they can talk to you. Because when you've got an 8-year-old terrified that they're going crazy, and worried about going crazy, to me, is appalling. And this is about you honoring what they're experiencing, however they're experiencing it. And if they're not fearful, then be really careful that you're not promoting your own fear so that they do become fearful. Because if they're not fearful and they're dealing with this, then that's okay.
It is, and it's a damn good point, too.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, well, from talking to Joe, of course, I haven't been in this field that long, just 3 years now, but from talking to Joe, it seems that a lot of times, or even enjoy the visitors, let's say, and I have a feeling that when the fear sets in, it may really be coming from the adults or from scary stories or maybe even scary movies, and I mean, me as an adult, I wasn't afraid when it started, because I had no pre-programming. So I can imagine that children, it would be the same thing. What do you think?
I think it's there are children that are frightened, and I think that's why it's even more important to find out what's going on with them. And the classic ones are, you know, having nightmares, having dreams where they wake up really frightened. They may be terrified of the dark in what is more normal I mean, it's normal to be terrified of the dark, but this is an excessive fear. They may be terrified of the closet or having the curtains open. They may be fearful of clowns, Santa Claus, owls with big eyes, or animals with big eyes. They may, you know, those are all classic screen memories of one of the beings. So if they have those kinds of fears, then you need to explore what is actually going on and what are the nightmares, what is it that they're afraid of. And if they need the light on when they go to bed or whatever, you get to honor that. I remember one little boy describing that a triangular craft lands outside at night and six little, he called them grey, black, little alien beings come in, and he said they're quite friendly and they play with me, but he said I don't like them touching me because they feel like dolphins.
Oh.
Which is really interesting that he had a sense of what they felt like. And, you know, I worked with the mother about, well, what can we do to make him feel better about that? And, you know, that he knows that they're not going to hurt him. Is there anything else he needs in his room to feel comfortable with that and whatever? And he grew past the fear of all of that. But what's interesting about the feel of the skin is a 15-year-old child that I did work with in the UK when I was over there actually said the identical thing, that the skin of the being felt like dolphin skin. And what was fascinating to me, that Dr. Michael Wolff, who worked with a lot of the secret programs and wrote The Catchers of Heaven, one of the things he said about the beings was, an alien I didn't like, and their skin feels like dolphin skin because they're actually related in species to the dolphins, which was really fascinating to get that kind of corroboration from someone who was in the know, who had actually met these beings in underground facilities.
And a child, yeah.
Yeah, and the children, a four-year-old child, how does a four-year-old child know?
It's amazing.
Like dolphins, that takes it to a whole new level of the soul memory and the awareness a lot of these children have.
They do have contactee children seem to be very aware actually, in all fairness, since we've been keeping track of so many generations now, you can watch the progression. I was talking with this with a fellow researcher the other day. I'm not going to mention his name, but him and I were discussing this. You know, we've gone back now. We can go back a little more than 100 years in a couple of families and watch how each child seems to get a little better. Like in my family growing up, all the kids, when we were all sitting around the house, the phone would ring, everybody would know who was on the phone, somebody would knock at the door. Matter of fact, it was to see who could say fastest who it was at the door. Because everybody just knew. There was no doubt about it. Well, I see, like, my son's abilities are actually faster than mine. He's still got to learn how to enhance them and use them on a regular basis, but they are. And, you know, I've been watching the next generation of children. Their abilities are faster. They're better. They're brighter. Now, you know, I'm going to give E.T. some credit on this, but I really think for the families that are raising these children, that understand what these children are, I think it's been encouraged now. And that makes a big difference. What do y'all think?
Absolutely. One of the things that I'd like to mention at this point is what seems to happen, not only are the children aware of what's going on when they go up on the craft, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but also the spiritual concepts that they're out with as well. And this 9-year-old that I've been working with, who is with her mother and an interpreter, in Northern Europe, I can't actually give you the actual country because the little 9-year-old said that we have to keep undercover. Now, this is a 9-year-old, all right? And saying there's five like her in the school. And what she said is that her purpose on earth is to protect her little brother and her family, to help her family wake up, and she said, and to heal water. And she does this because she speaks three star languages, and she speaks one of these languages at water, with water. And her mother has said they've actually tested the water afterwards, and it tastes quite different. So she has an understanding that the words that she's using are a frequency that actually alters the nature of water. Now, this is a 9-year-old we're talking about that is aware of what she can do. And for me, you know, you look at, well, what's the science behind that? And then we hear of Masaru Emoto messages in Ward, the Japanese scientist that has found that with water, looted water, that if you use certain frequencies, whether it's music, whether it's prayer, whether it's intent, you can actually change the nature of water itself. And what is precisely that? But she also talks about spiritual concepts, such as she talks about where she's from, which is Dayland, and she said there's evening land and there's night land. And she actually talks about the fact that we all came from the land at daylight. And she says she doesn't like the word God because that's misused, and that this being or this intelligence that's in daylight, where we all came from originally, she said is like a ultra-terrestrial. And we all came from there. And we came to experience in nightland, which is a way of experiencing from another level. Now, that's how she describes it, which is really fascinating for a 9-year-old to describe it like that. So we're talking about spiritual concepts, which is huge. And she also talks about being given a number of books. They're not really books. She said they're information, if you like, that she's been given about who we are and what have you. And I asked her about these different books. And they all have a different... the things with the books are quite fascinating in the sense that these different books tell us more about who we are, really, in terms of one of them is about the origin of the species, one of them is about nature, one of them is about where we come from, one of them is about how we communicate with everything on the planet, and she has different colors for them, which she's been given. I'm actually madly looking through here to actually tell you, here we go. The 7 books that she's been given is the red book's about creation and our origins. The brown one is about different planets and the life there. The light green one, she says, is about nature and how we can make contact with plants and animals. The dark green one's about the body and how it really works and how we get to evolve. The blue book is about light and truth. The red-brown one she can't open yet, and took the key from her in the 1700s, which is fascinating, the dragon analogy there. And the black book is about darkness and evil. And she said, they contain important information. And this is what she is being given by 2 of these non-physical beings. One's a blue being and one's a greeny being, which she said comes from beyond this universe. And they teach her and guide her and give her the information that we actually need. She talks about schools shutting out your light. She says they program you like a computer, and what happens is that slowly they shut down your light so you can no longer access the inner truth that you are actually born with. Now, this is a 9-year-old we're talking about here, a 9-year-old that seems to have concepts about how we're being shut down as a species, how we're being programmed out of our awareness. I mean, these are huge concepts. And this is what I'm talking about. The spiritual awareness alone is quite profound.
Outstanding. The books that this young girl speaks about are, I suppose, interdimensional books, right?
Yes. She says that they're like books, but they're not books.
Yes, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
One of the things she actually said to me via an interpreter is, poor kids who come to volunteer. We have such a difficult time ahead of us, a real fight. But I'm here to help my family wake up, because she said everyone is sleeping. So they're aware that their mission is difficult here. And the interesting thing is they're all aware of their mission. They know what they've come here to do. And they are a lot more awake. And as Joe was saying about this intergenerational link, it's almost like through the generations, each new generation is an upgrade with more awareness, more understanding, more abilities. And that's the link that I've been looking at in terms of the DNA and how our DNA is changing and the evidence of that DNA change, which is another part of what I'll talk about in the next one that we do, is I'll go into detail about the real evidence, the tangible biological evidence that our DNA is being changed and we are being upgraded. It's not just that we were, you know, we're a hybrid species, which, you know, there's plenty of evidence that I won't go into now that suggests that we're a hybrid species of a number of these visitors. I mean, a number of them. And we know that the military alone knows that at least 57 species have been visiting this planet. How many of them have altered and changed our DNA is another moot point. We really don't know exactly the numbers that have, spliced their own genetics into, our human DNA for different outcomes. And this, of course, leads into why we're getting now ADHD, why we're getting dyslexia. I believe very strongly that some of the acceleration of these particular so-called dysfunctions is that they are actually new programs of a different reality to us. And Neil Gold in Hong Kong, who you mentioned, Joe, about his own ADHD, and he's written the book Encounters of the ADHD Kind. I remember Neil telling me that he's always experienced reality differently. And this is what I think the ADHD is, where these children very quickly at school, they're harder to program. And why do you think that might be? Is that the less programming, the more chance they have of being able to retain that their own more expanded reality. And more of, as this little girl I call Kathy from Northern Europe, to retain more of their light. And this, I think, goes with, I'm looking at autism as well, the exponential expansion of autism that's going on. A lot of the autistic children, I've had one woman who has four autistic children, and she told me that they all see things. They see things and tell her things. And when I was talking to the mother who is a teacher of Kathy, the little girl I've just mentioned, who is also a linguist, I might add. So when her daughter came out with these three-star languages, it blew her mind. She said when she went to school, she was talking to a little 11-year-old autistic boy, and he came up to her, and he said, you know, he said, I need to talk to you. And she had said, why? And he said, because I told my mother that I could, because she was upset about my granddad dying, and I told her that I could see Granddad, and that he was all right. And my mum got very, very upset and told me not to talk to it. And so Kathy's mum said to him, well, why are you talking to me and telling me? He said, well, I can see from the energy of your face that it's safe to tell you. She's an autistic boy.
Wow. You know, this makes me think... I believe my son was about 9 or 10 years old, and we were in the metro in Paris traveling, and there was a somewhat mentally disabled young man that was sitting down, and he seemed to really be speaking with someone. And my little boy looked at him with so much compassion and so much love, and he turned to me and he said, Mom, he said, do you know how many of these people that we think are mentally, you know, disabled, do you think they really are experiencing something different and we don't have any point of reference for what their experience is? So I thought that was very good and deep analysis on his part, and it makes me wonder how many people in our mental institutions are having actually experiences that they've had no support for in their family or their upbringing, and they haven't been able to integrate that. So I think it's really important that we help our children integrate all of these experiences. It's absolutely vital.
I say sacrifice a little boogers to the ET. No, I'm just
what did you say, Joe?
I said sacrifice to the little butts. Oh, man. I got lots of children in my family that are very, very active. Very, very, they have excellent imaginations. All of them will probably be gifted writers in the future, but they're all ADHD because none of them can sit still for 5 seconds. And it doesn't matter if they're 4 or 34, they just can't sit still. They're always on the go. They're always very inquisitive. They always need to know anything they can get their hands on. Oh, but I wanted to go back to something, because recently we've been cracking down on how many aliens have been visiting the planet. We pulled in a couple of favors from friends of ours and bigwigs, and then we did a pool of almost all of the abduction researchers to find out exactly, you know, what they were seeing, the abduction, not overall ET, not, you know, ET's buzzing the planet and stuff like that, but what was actually visiting. Come to find out some weird stuff. One, you know, most people don't realize there's almost four different heights of the gray, three different colors. And when you combine them together, it makes about 11 or 12, but they're all basically the same alien. It's the same thing with the reptilians. Most people think there's like 10 different species of reptilian. No, there's actually one. They're just all kind of related to each other, and it kind of spread out. So what's happened, I think, over the years is because people are seeing different versions of the same thing, we've kind of quadrupled the number. But I went back and did a spaceship count for the last 500 years, and I hate to say there ain't very many of them. There's the saucer, the elongated saucer, the big old rectangular thing, the big huge orb, the little bitty orb, the teardrop, and most of the ones we're describing right now would be considered like scout crafts or probes, the big huge triangles, they say, that are, you know, 4 miles across, or the big rectangular ones with the humps in them, which we know are Gray's motherships, or even the big orbs, or even some of the elongated saucers, the big huge ones. We know that's reptilians, humans, and Grays. And that's really all we've been seeing flying. So I've kind of put the kibosh on the government's take on this, because, you know, a lot of that information came out through Greer's people. And since in the last decade and a half, we haven't been able to find that many. And it actually makes more sense to me, because when we start getting into genetic programs, it seems to be very goal-orientated. And ever since we started the blood type studies, I got to say, it's yielded data. First off, it yielded some data of Mary. I wasn't even looking for, like, South America and Central America, or 99.9%. Oh, nowhere else on the planet can you find this but Central and South. If the out of Africa theory is true, then you should see the same mix of blood across the whole planet like you do in other areas. What you see in the Americas is you see South America, 99.9% O. Central America, 99.9% O. North America, about 55 to 60% O. Now, there's a couple of coincidences here. One, we had all the old writings of the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Toltecs, the Incans, all talking, and the Nazcans, all talking about these aliens that used to come visit here and hang out in this part of the world. We also see an upward progression, not a downward progression, meaning that when you get to the bottom of North America, there's a cluster of O between California, New Mexico, Nevada, and Mexico. And then you see A, B, B, R, and back and forth. Along there, you see clusters. But you don't really see a general mix across the whole population. So we've learned that not only are we clustering together in colors and nationalities and stuff like that, but we're clustering together in blood types, which just threw me for a loop. Matter of fact, the three doctors I was working with on this, it threw them for a loop. It actually threw them for a loop. They were kind of like, well, wait, this 2 and 2 is not adding up to be 4 here. There is something drastically wrong here. So we pushed it a little bit further. You know, I know you're familiar with the pharaohs, with the heads. They said they had the disease because they had those long faces and those long heads backward. We know the Nazcan were boarding their children to look almost the same way. In the old days, I always assumed that was a graze. That's what happens when you make dumb assumptions. Come to find out, we really think it's the human-type aliens because they're described with long heads in the back. So it's been a weird ride. I just wanted to bring you up on that because that's recent research that we've been letting out over the last 6 months and over the last year. And I hadn't quite had a chance to let y'all and some of my other friends know about it because we've just been putting it out as it's been coming in. It's been a progression in work. So those kind of things, always see big changes like that, you know. Because I was with you when I was listening to Greer and the Disclosure Project. I'm like 57 types. All right, that sounds good to me. And I really thought, in all fairness, I thought the government knew more than they did. But working with the MILABs, I realized, oh, no, they do not know as much as we think they do. Matter of fact, I don't think they know half as much as we think they do. Because of some of the questions they ask MILAB, you have to go, what? You're the government. You should already know this. Plus, on top of that, in the United States and in Europe lately, they've been harping down on UFO, on abduction researchers especially. The amount of MILABs amongst abduction researchers have gone up fourfold just in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's weird because abductions have been going up too, and I'm thinking, is there something it's like I get this sense, and I hate to get on this topic because I know it's not what we're supposed to be talking about tonight, but I've been getting the sense that a little more sense of urgency, does that make any sense to you at all, Mary? I know I said it kind of haphazardly there, but I'm curious.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a number of things there. Although I've mentioned what the military are saying, or at least through whistleblowers, I've had all sorts of counts given to me by different experiences. One lady up in northern Queensland said that she's aware of 150 different types of grains, for example.
Yeah.
And someone else said three types of the reptilians, two are benevolent, one is not. These are the kinds of figures I sometimes get, but what I am getting too is those, and not just adults, but children, talking about their family being non-human, and I'm talking about the manta beings. I've got this little 8-year-old that lives, very close to where I am, and he says his family is the mantis, which is the insect-like being, and he said, you know, they're my family. My human mum's here to look after me. And he's got very profound things to say about the manta family as well, which is fascinating. When he goes up there, he makes this kind of trilling, chirping sound. And at first his mum said, oh, he's making the sound of a bird or something. And I looked at him and he shook his head. And I said, it's not that, is it? What is it? And he said, that's the sound the manta make when I'm up on the craft. And I was really interested in that because I've just done the foreword for Simon Park, a gentleman in the UK, who's written a book about his own family of manta, where he goes up onto the craft and he's himself sometimes, you know, his essence, if you like, going into the manta form. And he said, they are my family and my manta mother. And he mentioned so I said, do they make any sounds? And he said, yes, a kind of chirping, trilling sound. And I was fascinated by that. And he said to me, when they make it is when they're really happy with you. And when I was little, they used to hold me above their head and make this trilling sound to let me know they were happy with me. Now, I have to state here, he lives in the UK. This little boy of 8 lives locally to where I am. And he actually, so I said, okay, and I asked this Paul, I'll call him Paul, this 8-year-old, when you hear the drilling sound, is there anything else going on? Just to see what he would say. And he said, oh, yes, they make it when they're happy with me and they hold me above their head. And it's like they sing to me. This is a very specific sound and a very specific detail that I've got someone in the UK saying the identical thing to this little 8-year-old. They've never spoken, they've never corresponded. Whatever, and yet this very specific sound. And the other thing that was specific was that this gentleman in the UK talks about sometimes the soul transfer into that form, sometimes on the craft. And I won't go into all the soul stuff today, other than to say that this little boy of 8 told me that sometimes he evaporates into the manta form, and this is really interesting. Like, and I said, well, what's that like? He said, because he's computer literate, he said, pixelating. And I said, so what happens? He said, and then I go back into my human form, my human container. And I said, what's it like when you're in the mantic form? And he said, well, it's a bit strange. Now, remember, this is identical again to what Simon Parks has told me about him going into that form sometimes on the craft, and basically leaving his human container for a while. Now, I can talk more about this when we talk about the soul side of this, but remember, we're talking about an 8-year-old and a 52-year-old in different hemispheres actually talking about an identical their family being manta beings. Now, this little boy also talks about he relates to the lion cat beings, and this is something that Simon also says, that the cat beings plus the reptilian Simon also has a close relationship with. But this little boy, it's the cat beings and the manta beings. And he also, quite spontaneously, when we were having a chat, said, you know, the pyramids weren't built by humans, they were built by the cat people. And he then described that. And what was fascinating was, and there's actually a spaceship under the pyramid. This was quite spontaneous. There's other things that he's told me about if you like, portals or stargates on this planet. And I said, well, how many are there? And he said, oh, there's many. He said, there's many all around the world. He said, and he also mentions that he's been across where they've gone through a artificial portal in space into other universes, because he told me that they seed other universes. Now, this is an 8-year-old we're talking about. He said they also send technology into other universes as well. But when he saw a picture in my room where it's a space picture that I was given a long time ago, and he said, that's the technology. So whoever had done this picture, what this technology was, because this boy recognized it. And he said, it's a gateway. It's a technology created by the craft that they go through into other universes. And this picture has been identified by a number of other experiences as showing a gateway, a portal. And these are the kinds of things that I find really profound and corroborative, in the sense that it's not just one person telling me the same thing. They might be different ages, different professions. I mean, I think that people need to know that some of my clients come from a whole range of ages and cultures and beliefs. And, you know, I've got clients that are psychologists, psychiatrists, lawyers, doctors, geneticists, you know, scientists, for example. So, you know, they know how bizarre this sounds. They know that, and this is the biggest problem for those coming from those professions, is, you know, this is contrary to everything I've ever been taught or educated in. And the hardest thing for them, and I know that AS understands this, is marrying what they've been educated into in terms of their profession and what they're experiencing, which really challenges them to completely release some of this programming so that they can either accept this is real or just completely deny it and say, look, it's just too hard for me, I can't go there. But with the children, I think the most important thing is that if that you show that you're open to listening to what's going on for them, then you enable them to be a lot more grounded with it. They can feel safe with you to explore it, and then, you know, they don't necessarily then have to go into denial and become conflicted as they get older and go into a place where, you know, a lot of them try and shut down their experiences. And I believe very strongly that a lot of the star kids go on to drugs and alcohol to shut down their abilities and experiences because they want to be the same as everybody else. They don't want to be different. They, you know, they want to just be normal, quote, because they have no other way of understanding what's going for them. And they're scared.
Well, yeah. They don't. I mean, abuse and alcohol abuse is 40 to 50% of contactees have, you know what I found, Mary, and this is really the truth for the organization, is that we get a lot of people who come in with addictions, all sorts of addictions. Probably more than 50% of the membership, and our membership's getting way up there these days. And but I learned, once someone starts to listen to them, it helps them to understand that, no, you're not totally crazy. Maybe not everything that you see or hear is true. Some might be disinformation, some might be just misunderstanding. You know, because unfortunately humans are stuck interpreting extraterrestrial stuff with our limited understanding of the universe that we look through. So, you know, there may be some confusion there, but I notice once you start talking to them and letting them know there's other people having these experiences, we start connecting them together, I notice that without any therapy or any intervention, they just tend to wean themselves off of the drugs and stuff. And I have been amazed to watch it. I've actually been amazed by how many letters I got saying thank you. I'm like, I didn't do anything. You did that. All I did was show you that somebody else was out there being abducted. I mean, you're the one, because, I mean, come on, the only person to get off of alcohol or drugs is yourself. So I've been amazed to see that. And I do think in the young people, unfortunately, I think someone learned the hard way that it doesn't always null. It can actually excel it in some areas. But they do, a lot of them. I notice, I'd hate to say this, and there's no way to put a number on it, but I would imagine a good chunk of contacting children are potheads, a good chunk of them. And it is simply so they can numb it out, slow it down. For them, it's like slowing the world down to their pace, you know, so that they can actually, or slowing themselves for the world's pace is what I should say, because that's what it seems like, you know, because they're moving so fast, and their minds are working so fast, they actually got to slow it down so they can stay in tune with everyone else, or just makes trouble for them. But that's been interesting to watch in itself, I got to say. And it always fascinates me to listen to children talk. You know, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard my bug-eyed friends, my bug-eyed cousin, my bug-eyed family. Literally, I've heard this more than 100 times. And of course, a lot of times they describe it differently. And the out-of-body thing, all right, let me say this. The second life thing might be the best thing to call this, has become extremely prominent in the last decade. We're starting to have contactees, both children and adults, starting to remember their onboard lives. Or it's not always on board. Sometimes it's other colonies. But they seem to go back and forth a lot. You know, I caused them when it broke the uploading technology from they can actually physically upload your soul, not only into another host body, but also into a complete computer-generated imagery system, which we find fascinating itself. Because, you know, we get a lot of different descriptions, and some of them, it's a non-physical abduction where they take you from your home, but they upload you into the system. Sometimes they upload you onto the ships in another body, which is the same but different. It depends on who it is that's abducting you, I guess, on how the body's going to actually turn out. I've noticed that over the years, but it's fascinating to see. It's something that we really started researching heavy in the last 5 years about what I would call onboard lives. And the children talk about hanging out and playing, using the teachers, playing with technologies far beyond anything they're going to see down here. And they're talking about it very nonchalant. I mean, you can listen to these children's voices and know there's no intent to deceive here or any lies. They're just simply talking about what they've experienced. And that itself is a refreshing, because when you're dealing with adults, there's always circumspect there that they may not be telling the truth or for any reason may be trying to pull the wool over your eyes or get rich on ufology, which I still haven't figured out how you do that yet, but if we do, I'll let everybody know.
Yes?
Hello?
Did you disconnect, Phil?
Sounds like he's not there.
Oh, I think, well, he'll realize it soon enough, I suppose. Well, I wonder if we're still on the air, though.
Do you think it's just the break in between?
No.
We have reached maintenance solutions. There's no one in office of the number of the call.
Okay.
We'll contact you as soon as possible.
Let's see.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Okay. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. We're just missing Joe. Okay. And I have
That's
no idea.
Weird.
Okay. We didn't know where you went or if you got abducted.
I got abducted. Yeah, I got abducted. I was talking to y'all, and then I heard y'all talking. I'm like, well, they can't hear me. And poof, I was gone. I don't know where I was. I heard my phone went da-dunk. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Well, I guess it was reminding me that we've got a break in like 2 minutes. But Mary, why don't you tell them where the websites are and find you. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're on the UFO on the cover, the one that says Awakening Left Side, if you click it, takes you to the CERN site. If you click Mary's picture, it takes you to her site, her personal site. So check them out both, but I'll let her give you the address and tell you a little bit about them before we go to break. So go ahead, Mary.
Yes, well, you can do it two ways. Just put up Mary Rodwell on Google, it's www.acern.com.au. That's acern.com.au, and you'll get straight onto my website. My email address is there if you need to email me.
You know, and she's really easy to find, guys, and she's very approachable. I will tell you that. Also, you can visit our friend AS over at Cosmic U, which is at the top right corner of the UFO on the cover page. It's also listed right there in the banner on the UFO on the cover. You can click it right there. It'll take you right over there. Every now and then, I know AS hangs out there a lot, and from time to pop in and hang out and cause mischief and then run. Say, oh, no, I'm out of here now. Stirred over the wasp nest. Hey, good trouble. It's good trouble. It keeps the brains working. Ash had a very good debate over there the other day on different types of abduction. I actually quite enjoyed it. Because, you know, I like talking to intelligent people, which I know a lot of, and by saying that, I know a lot of people that I would rather not talk to.
We have a really wonderful group of members there. It's really nice, very open-minded and very kind, so...
Yeah.
If anybody wants to check it out, it's www.cosmicu.us. Everyone's welcome, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yes, hey, go over there, check it out. Like I said, it's easy to find. Actually, if you just type in Cosmic U, it's always the first one on the page. So you just click it, it takes you right over there. It makes it quite easy to go over there. And also the regular sites, ParanormalRadioNetwork.com, .org, iCar1.com. Check out, feel free to make donations, help out everybody. Everybody's working hard and spending their own monies across the board, so feel free to do that. You know, all the sites we just mentioned, including Murray's, I'll take donations, so help out if you can. Pick your favorite, ufologists, and help them out. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take about a 6-minute break. We'll be right back, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to UFO from the Kerr. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting in speaker with Mary Rodwell and AS tonight, and we'll be back in 8, so stay tuned.
Okay, fantastic. And then the third show will be on the subject of extraterrestrial contact and the dimensions of soul, which really a lot of these experiences, you know, happen partly in the physical, but a lot happen on the higher planes of existence. And I know it's complex to understand for someone who has not been exposed to these other realms yet. But, of course, the day it happens, everyone will understand when they experience it. But this show will be really focused on that, the dimensions of soul and extraterrestrial contact. So that's what I wanted to say. And, Mary, I know you have other young experiences that you would like to share with us. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. And what I like to do is, in a way, say, you know, I get many, many emails, as well as, obviously, I do have the opportunity to talk to the parents and, you know, sometimes the children, which is wonderful. But one of these came from the U.S., and she's very kindly given me permission to share it with you. And I have been working with this lady on and off, because one of the things that fascinated her was that her daughter had written some strange symbols on her arm and told her mother it was extremely important. From that, I found out that the mother obviously had had many experiences, and what she told me about her 5-year-old daughter was quite interesting, and I will just share this with you. She told me it was very late, around midnight, and they were driving back from Grand Portage Reservation. She said her daughter, out of the blue, said, "Mum, I want to talk about aliens. But take us." So I said to her, "Okay, honey, tell me what you want to." And she, it was so overwhelming, she said, that I'm going to actually tell you briefly what I got out of it. She told me that they take us often, and they carry her. She can't move, but is not scared, and can see everything that's happening. She said that they take us all together, with different aliens of different sexes for each one of us. They think Daddy snoring is funny, and they laugh at him. I have a sense of humor, and that further confirmed it for me, the mother said. When they take Daddy, they make sure he's asleep, because they're afraid of him. He's too strong for them, and he might hurt them. And she says, he's 6'2" and 250 pounds. He has similar scars and implants, she says to herself, but has no recollection of anything. Her daughter said, remember she's 5, said that they don't ever hurt us, but they take us to her doctor's office to make sure we're okay. She said, I'm afraid of them sometimes, and they will make me go to sleep. In other words, her mother's afraid of them and make her go to sleep. She started to tell me there are 2 girl aliens that come for her, and I asked if they had pretty brown hair like her. She said, very condescendingly to me, Mom, they don't have hair. My response was, did you know they were girls because of their pretty green or blue eyes? Again, she replied, they have black eyes. I said, were they wearing dresses? No, they look old and were not wearing anything. I asked how she knew they were girls, and she said, I just know, Mum. I asked her if they talked to her, and she said, yes, Mum, but it does not come from their mouth. She was unable to tell me how she could hear them, just can. As best as I did not believe her, I was so surprised to hear of this. Her oldest daughter, she said that she also sometimes wakes up and she can't move, but it does not scare her. You see, this is one child talking to her mother quite spontaneously about their experiences. And one of the boy, Aidan, in Australia, who said, they only come at night, they float, not walk, and become invisible. There are blue ones too, like the ones I see in my mind's eye. These are the kinds of ways they will describe them. I ended up also finding out what was interesting was some of the spiritual way these children understand the world. And one of them is an amazing 10-year-old that I spoke to and his parents in the UK. I shall call him David. One of the things the parents told me was that often they've seen him go into his room and meditate with crystals around him. Apparently in school, he complained they're trying to teach us in a straight line when he said, I think in a spiral. And there's nothing they can teach me that I don't already know. Remember, he's 10. He apparently went to the office advising them how to speak to children. He even started doing yoga in school. He just said, I don't have a problem with the world. The world has a problem with me. And I asked, how does he know things? And he said, well, I just know. He downloads concepts and formula, and he told me one of the formulas that he had in come to him was to create a portal. I asked, how do you get this information? And he answered, sometimes it comes in my head. I just get switched on by the formula. I just see it. I asked him about energy fields in people, and he answered, when I feel someone close, I vibrate. I am able to see light coming and colors flashing. I said, do you know what the colors mean? And he said, I understand the frequency of colors. So I said, do you get information from that? And he said, yes, everyone has a divine energy around them. I said, do you have a sense of your abilities? He said, I feel from my being when you are giving out positive energy, that helps other people. It helps them, he said. And I asked him, because this 8-year-old boy in Australia told me he could communicate with animals. So I asked him, can you communicate with animals? And his answer was, I believe that human and animal souls are connected. I said, do you understand or feel their emotions? And he said, I feel the soul's vibration as long as I follow their sound, which is interesting, he's talking about frequency. So I responded, so you tune into a frequency the animal gives out? And his answer was, yes. So I then reiterated that and said, so you are connected through frequency and vibration. His answer was, I feel for all animals. What I see is every day more and more violence, and I want to stop that. There's too much destruction. So I asked him again, so you feel you're bringing in a frequency of peace? His answer was, I can bring good luck to their souls. So he then went on to saying, so I asked about the technology, and his answer was, I started to get it at 7 to 8 years old, and every day I understand more. And he said, I've been talking to people since I was 2 and helping since then. So in other words, he's been sharing his awareness and wisdom since 2 years old, which is what his parents told me. And so I said, how do you understand this? And he said to me, when I was born, it was given to me. This is my gift. And his father told me that at 2 to 3 years old, he'd said to them, I am the son of the sun. In other words, I am the S-O-N, son, of the S-U-N. And he also said, it's also love and the energy that connects us. You know, this, you know, I sort of said, you came through from the sun? Yes, from a place from the sun. And so I said, you know, how is that? And he said, it, you know, it's a portal. He explains it's a portal. The sun is a portal. He yes. said just black holes are a portal to other dimensions. And he said, I know everything is connected because of our energies that run through everything. We are all one. I can also feel energy changes in water. Our machines are polluting the world. So because of that, I asked for his understanding. I said, look, I am aware a 9-year-old girl has told me that she can change and heal water. And he said to me, so I said, do you understand me? And his answer was, yes. What she means is that her energies can heal water. It's through her energy she cleanses it. We have to understand that all things breathe. And then he goes into something very amazing for a young boy who's 10. He said, the government isn't helping. So I said, why? He said, well, they just want money and power and to live forever. He said, what we must do, he said, is understand that we must bring the inside and the outside together. What we can achieve is extraordinary. So I asked him, are there many like him around the globe? And he said, yes, many thousands. So here is a young boy who's very aware of why he's come. He's aware that part of what he has. What he's bringing. He's aware of not only what's happening on the planet, but there are others like him. He's also bringing in information to do with spiritual concepts, but also incredible mathematical formula that is helping him to create what he says are equipment for things like portals. Remember, I keep saying this is a 10-year-old. You know, what 10-year-old has this kind of depth of understanding, including what's happening on our planet from a government point of view and what have you. And I got a very, very similar thing from the 9-year-old girl that I spoke to and says that she can heal water. One of the things that she said to me was this. Not only the school, she said, there's nothing good about this system. Remember, this is a girl I will call Kathy. She comes from Northern Europe. This was through an interpreter. She said to me, school, there's nothing good about the system. The children are programmed by teachers, just push our keys. They contain the learning. They don't allow the children to expand it and to finish because we have to stop and do something else. The information is set and rigid at school. The school programs are like a virus. It destroys what we have inside of us. And when we are like the computer and get older, we grow up, we'll be finished. It extinguishes the light inside us when we are infected with the virus. They infect us and we lose access to information we had at the beginning. Education is only one of the methods that she said. The other, the inner core, she can be destroyed by stress, facing multiple tasks, less sleep, more anxiety. They're deliberately destroyed. And she was talking about how adults shut down because of the stress of their lives. Remember, this girl is 9 years old. She said, it's happening to animals and nature. Everything is being stressed. It's important to care for nature and treat animals well. Adults have 4 ears. They don't hear the messages we try to tell you. Adults don't hear what the doctors have to say. They're too stressed out. It interferes with the reality that the adults are in. what was fascinating for me was the understanding of how incredible we are as when we understand it. She says, we actually can do anything we desire. When children play by using their imagination, it's not just imagination. And when we stop them saying you can't do this or that, it stops them making it a reality. What they are imagining can be a reality. What at this time we call imagination can be a reality. We say it's not possible, but everything is possible. We need to believe it, and then we will have this capacity. I said to her, so when we rediscover what we can do, we can achieve our potential, I asked her. It is difficult, she said, because first of all, we don't believe it. Then if we believe it, we still have doubts which stop us. We have to be within ourselves to get in touch with our real truth in order to achieve this. There is a certain time when we will, a person does, it will spread to other people. And this is the way it will start. But what time, I can't tell you. She said, star children like herself have come to show us the way. The ones to start the process, helping the rest to wake up. She said she came from evening land to help us evolve. And when her purpose is accomplished, she will go to the dayland or daylight. She said, we've all been in dayland because we wanted more experiences. She said, the beings in contact with her do not live on another planet. They're located at the edge of the universe in the white light. And the interesting thing, she also said, was something of importance will happen in the next 5 years on this planet. And the parents have to listen to us. We need to educate them. She talked about being guides that teach her. And I asked her, how many star kids are there? And she said, 40 to 50% of people out of 100 are star kids. But many get lost, she said, through education, stress, and what have you, and only 20% will remember who they are. And I asked, so why don't they listen? And she actually said to her mum, through the interpreter, Mary has big ears. And the mother said, what do you mean? And she said, Mary listens when most adults don't. So at least I've got big ears, which obviously is a good thing. The important thing that I wanted to share there is that profound metaphysical awareness that we're talking about a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old quite aware how we are being shut down and how our education is so limited that they are not able to expand, trust that inner awareness and knowledge. And this is where I think, you know, we have to understand that so much has to change for us to really grow and change as a species. But this is from young children, and this is conscious recall. There's no hypnosis here. This is what they're telling their parents and those that are prepared to listen. And I think that, you know, we have to start listening.
Absolutely. It's so important to listen to these children. And can you hear me? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And, they really, it's the way I see it. Imagine we were to have a visitor from another world come into our home and tell us things, tell us, about their wisdom and everything. Well, young children, they really do come from another world. They were just somewhere else not so long ago. And they've come into our home and they have so much to share. And I think it's really important that we listen to what they have to share. And we really have a lot to learn from them. I think the experiences really need to be, for example, I'd recommend anyone who has a child who has experiences or stories, I would recommend taking a journal. If the child isn't journaling themselves, I would really recommend taking a journal and journaling all these concepts, all the experiences, all the stories. And it will probably add up to something really amazing when you read it a little bit later. I think this is really important. That's something I'd like to share with everyone about the journaling. And Yeah, I think it's so important to listen to these children, and it's without fear, of course. And this is echoing. Are you hearing the echo, Mary?
I do hear the echoing a little bit. Yes.
That's what I was getting distracted because I'm hearing my own voice. Is Joe? Are you around?
You don't hear it anymore, do you? No, it's gone bye bye.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was having trouble speaking because I was hearing myself. Okay, so I think it's really important to listen to these children, what they have to tell us, and not be afraid when they speak, and certainly not frown or look worried or anything, because that could make them worried about the experiences, but just listen to what they have to say and see what influence these experiences have on them. I mean, wouldn't we prefer to know than not know? I think it's best to know anyways. And yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, you know, my awakening just happened, 3 years ago? So I came from a very scientific background, and it just went, 360 in one night because my world just shifted completely due to the experiences that I started having. And I can see how parents who are not awake really just misinterpret what the child has to say, or not even understand or have no comprehension for it. Yet I think parents have to do some research, do their homework, have an open mind, be fearless, or, you know, and stay away from polarized information. That's very, very important. Stay away from it. Traumatizing people, really, this isn't good. So I think parents just do the research, do the homework, and have a really open mind with these experiences and see where it takes the children, huh? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No,
what I say with that, parents, I know how many are confronted by things that their children are saying. And I've actually got something I'd like to share with you of a lady whose daughter is 18. And she wrote to me because she'd heard about, you know, my work with Star Children and what have you, about Star Children and what have you. And this is what she actually said. My 18-year-old daughter is one of these new humans. She calls herself Homo Novi. But the term comes from them, she informed me. Them are ET people. She's been in contact with them for the past 10 years telepathically, she claims, and in fact is in constant contact with them. And she said, what I've heard from her in the last 10 years is shocking and unbelievable for someone like me who is a biotechnology scientist. What can I say? I did think something was wrong with her. However, her inside information on ancient history, people of our planet, philosophy, metaphysics, biological information were intriguing and hardly could be prescribed to her imagination. I would try and find the info she'd give me and find sources to support my theory that she wasn't crazy and this might really be happening. What she actually found was that by looking at in books like from Dolores Cannon, Stephen Greer, Lobsang Rampur, etc., they were qualifying that kind of information. Now, I've actually met this family. I've met Lee, her daughter, who is an incredible young lady. She draws a lot of the ambassadors that she meets and speaks about. We've actually done an interview with her, which I hope to get out there before very long. One of the drawings was what she called Mazebera, her mentor and ambassador of an ET race. A member of the custodian group, which she says that there's 12 members, that originally seeded Earth and taken care of Earth. And the base, she said, is on the dark side of the moon, which is really interesting. Other ambassadors are there too. It's not a three-dimensional being. He's an energy being. And that's when, you know, you were talking, Joe, about the different kinds of being. Many of my clients talk about light beings, for example, blue beings, luminescent beings, you know, a whole range of other kinds of forms, as well as the standard ones that we are, you know, aware of. His race evolved from a three-dimensional into an energy nation. She presents herself to her in her mind most of the time. It's, and she said it's really a biological suit. The real being is inside, is in an energy form. And she sees that energy form and describes it as angelic, especially even with something that looks like it might be wings. Now, she's done a whole range of these drawings. She understands their culture, their nature, and she talks about it so matter-of-factly that, you know, you just look and think, this is her reality. It's just, like, so blindingly obvious. The natural way she speaks about her relationships, the ones that have a sense of humor, there's nothing about her. Now, you know, I've worked with, you know, a whole range of people, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, some of them that do medical problems, some of those that I certainly would send on to see, to, you know, have help psychologically. But the difference is, and I know you know this, Joe, the difference is from someone who's functioning, who's experiencing a reality way out of the size of what they're comfortable with, against someone who is, help is absolutely crystal clear. You don't have any conflict because they're not operating in a way that is balanced, that, you know they're not grounded, whereas somebody's having these experiences are conflicted. You know, they're wondering whether they're losing the plot. They are trying to work through it. And one of the most important points in here is when we get the skeptics saying, oh, you know, they want to believe this. You know, they're Star Trek fanatics or whatever. Many of my clients, not even slightly interested in Star Trek or science fiction, don't even believe in aliens or extraterrestrials or visitors or anything else, but are having the experience. And they're the most skeptical of their experiences, more so than a skeptic would. And primarily it's because they want to prove to themselves they're not crazy. So this isn't about wanting to believe. This is often about not wanting to believe, but having so much in their face that they can't dismiss it. I met a scientist only recently who has seen UFOs with his family, with his wife, who's another professional. His biggest problem coming to me was really wanting to come and to find out that this wasn't real. Even though he'd seen the UFOs, he'd had beams in his bedroom, and his partner had seen them. Wanting me really to say, well, actually, you know, you're fantasizing, this really isn't. But actually, what having to face, he said, but the trouble is now, I've got to, if I take this on board, I don't know where to begin because everything I've ever believed is going to go down the tube. And I've got to start again. And I said, yeah, welcome to the club.
You know, it's funny. I mean, what I've been thinking about is really we're the equivalent of those who claimed that the earth was round when people thought the earth was flat. So I tell to the skeptics, the earth is no longer flat, first of all. And then, instead of us having to prove that these things are real to them, why don't you guys, skeptics, prove to us that they're not real? You know, switch it around a little bit. Just a thought I wanted to throw in.
Matter of fact, I was, you know what, made me think of something. I was listening to two skeptics the other night on another radio program on this network. It was a good show. But, you know, I was listening to their arguments, and the whole time I'm typing in a room, rookies. Because, you know, it's like the sleep, and I wanted to bring this up earlier in the show about the sleep paralysis thing. I kept hearing them, every abduction to them was sleep paralysis, and the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going, you're morons. I said, the majority of the cases I deal with, they're not even in bed when they're taken. I'm like, what are you talking about, sleep paralysis?
Exactly.
And I'm not going to rule that people don't. I mean, I know people have sleep paralysis, but abductees are a much different thing. I mean, they take you in your car, they take you sitting on your couch, they take you at work, they take you in prison. It doesn't really matter if you're awake, asleep, or not. If they need you at that time, they're taking you. That's just how it is to it.
You know, I think we have to stop wasting our energy trying to prove that it's real now. We know it's real. There's so many people who know it's real because of their experiences. And this guy, you know, has to try to prove that it's not real now, and we're not going to be able to, so I'm very confident about that.
We've got to work on a double standard for evidence, too. I mean, frankly, you know, and I say this all the time, if I can videotape you robbing the grocery store with my camera and there's people standing next to me while I'm doing it, you're going to prison. They're not even going to argue with me. They're going to go to court to judge because they say, okay, you're guilty and you're going to jail. But if that same group of people are standing in that same corner While the store is being robbed and we film a UFO, they're going to ignore us, or they're going to say we're crazy. That's a complete and utter double standard. If it's good enough to get someone a death sentence, it's good enough to be used as evidence anywhere. So I've always had an issue with that. And it's not, and things can be fake, but some things can be proven not fake. So it's like when Mary was talking about the portal, you know, one of the pictures on the ICAR site is of that portal over that power plant on Blunt Island. You know, here's a big, huge portal. And the portal's cool. And everybody always looks at the portal and they're like, wow, what is that? And everyone always misses. Fly in right next to the smokestack is a UFO on an angle headed to the center of the portal. And, I mean, so these things are actually being caught on film, you know, legit on film. You can analyze it, dissect it, whatever. It's a legitimate. Bruce McAfee's looked at it, had no problem with it. So, you know, the evidence is there for the people who want to look.
Yeah, if they do their research also, because most of them just throw out and we have to respond to that. Well, no, do your research first and then, you know, start arguing. But, Joe, I have three questions that I'd really like to ask to Mary.
Get them in.
I think they're going to be really helpful. Oh, okay, great. May I ask them now, Mary, or?
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. So I'd like to ask you a first question, Mary. What are some, from your experience, what are some telling signs that a child is having contact experiences?
Sometimes they'll actually just say, you know, something happened last night. You know, just like this little four-year-old explained, you know, the craft landed outside and the beings came in, but I just didn't like them touching me. So they'll sometimes say that. Another child may say, as a 2-year, 3-year-old, you know, one said to his mum, lights came in the room and they took me and they took you and they took baby up the spaceship and I was frightened until I saw his daddy there. So if they say things like that, it's quite possible that this is what's going on for them. They may sit, you know, say that they'll wake up because they're fearful. They say there's something in the room, for example, or they feel like something's coming to get them. The other stars that I talked about, if they show fears of clowns, if, you know, they won't go near anything that looks like the image of a clown or Santa Claus, those kinds of things will certainly indicate a possibility, you know, a screen memory, for example. Look at the drawings that they do. If they've had, if they start drawing things like UFOs, I've got drawings of a 4-year-old doing a triangular craft with an energy field around it, for example. One of the stories that I that showed me this child was having experiences was less than 2 years old, went to the bookcase and drew out a book with an E.T. face on it and said to her mum, this is the man that comes and gets me. She was not even 2 years old. These are, you know, these are classic things, for example, that will tell you there's something going on. And again, fear of the dark is another one where there is an extreme fear. We've got the natural fear of the dark, but an extreme fear where children don't want to go to sleep and need you in the room or whatever is an indicator that something's going on. And again, what you do if a child is frightened of, you know, ghosts or spirits or whatever, you know, you do whatever your belief system is, you have and help the child feel safe and secure. Knowing you're there, leave the door open, put the light on, or have a little night light or whatever it is. If they believe in Jesus, then, you know, have something around that makes them feel safe and talk about their guardian angel being there to look after them. And no matter what goes on and how they sleep, they're always there the next day and they're safe and sound. And, you know, they've still got their arms and legs attached. So whatever happens, it's so, you know, you keep it very tangible. You keep it very, very real. But the other things that will indicate this is if they start doing unusual drawings, might talk about their imaginary friend, for example.
Yeah.
Well, it might be imaginary. And so it's not about dismissing the imaginary friend. So ask, well, what does your imaginary friend look like? Get them to draw the imaginary friend. And if you're seeing, you know, the bald head or whatever, as I've seen drawings with the bald head and just the eyes and no nose, no mouth, no ears and no hair, then you're pretty certain of the type of imaginary friend that's there. Find out what the imaginary friend may say. Is it positive? Is it helpful? You know, all those kinds of things so that you get a sense. But at the same time, honor that experience because there's no harm coming, even if it is just imagination. There's no harm from coming for a child feeling safe or secure that's an imaginary friend, although I do know that many sort of talk about their friend is a ball of blue light, and this young 9-year-old told about her brother who has this orb of light that follows him. They've even got a photograph of this orb of light by the little toddler. And she said the orb of light actually protects her brother and has even protected him going down when he fell down the stairs once. It was like she felt that the ball of light slowed her little brother up so he didn't hurt himself coming down the stairs. She was fully aware of that, and that the mother also had seen photographs with this orb of blue light, which seems to be quite common with those that are having experiences. Parents have sent me pictures of their child, and there's been an orb by their head, not always blue, and sometimes other colours, almost like that's a support or a helper. And we do, you know, when I talk more about the soul aspect of this, the orbs of light are really significant. As one young boy, and I'll mention this again in our other, the next one that we do about the soul, was that when he was visited by these beings that came to the garden to talk to him, he noticed three balls of light came with them, and he recognized them as his departed granddad and his uncle and his grandma. And he actually recognized who they were, even though they were just balls of light. And I said, how do you know? He said, I just know. And I said, they're here so that I won't be frightened. So he even knew their purpose, and they actually went on the ship with the beings when the craft left. So this takes it to a whole new level in terms of what are souls in the form of, you know, of light or balls of light, or in metaphysical terms are called the Merkaba, you know, traveling and interacting with the physical, different physical beings. And I also want to say here that it's important that we don't get caught up so much with the forms as well, because I've had experiences tell me that, you know, the form or container isn't actually what the being is. It may be a being of light, but it will show itself in a form that it feels the person is ready for, or, you know, is a way of interacting in a more physical way with them, but actually that isn't what their real form is. So we have to be careful not to judge by form, which is don't judge the book by its cover. So that's an important one, because it's more about what do you feel from this being rather than what is the form saying to you, because that is really crucial with those that are in fear. They're often in fear because they say, oh, well, that reptilian being or that grey being is nasty because they look nasty. Well, that actually isn't the case. It may actually be, is what do you feel from that being? And they may feel wonderful love or compassion or whatever. And I'm saying that is the essence of that being. It's not the form. You know, look at us. We can look scary or we can look loving. Does that say who we are? No. What says who we are is how we behave and how we treat people. And I think we're being taught not to discriminate by look, but to actually understand that these beings are challenging us to grow up, to transcend our fears, our human fears, if we're to become part of the cosmic community.
That's such an important point, Mary, about this appearance, not judging them by their appearance, which is unfamiliar to us, which, you know, most people are afraid of what they don't understand or don't know or not familiar with. But to judge them, really, to not let that cloud the judgment of this actual being. And you know, I keep telling people, well, okay, we love our dogs, okay, because we know dogs are usually friendly, and but if we think about it, if we didn't know dogs at all, and a dog came from nowhere, from a spaceship, oh my, would we really be thinking this being is super friendly, or would we be afraid of it? You know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing. I don't know if I'm expressing this properly, but these beings are unfamiliar to people, so the first reaction may be fear. But if they were familiar to us, if we had spent more time acknowledging who they really are and everything, then perhaps the reaction would be completely different. I mean, Joe knows very well, and I think I might have told you, Mary, the first time I saw a gray, I wanted to hug the being. So this tells you something right there. I think it's really, you know, we really can't judge them by their cover. And we have beautiful humans that are pretty evil. Mm. And some not so good-looking humans who are really sweet. So that's an important point. Mary, I know you've partially answered this already, but if parents realize that the child is having experiences, what are some steps that they can take some steps that they could take, first steps. What do I do? I'm a parent. I know my child's being taken. What do I do?
The first thing is to listen and allow them to feel safe. They can say whatever they need to say about what their experience is and to honor that. Because whatever you think, it's important that you honor the way they interpret it and understand it. The other thing is also, to, you know, in terms of interpretation, it's very important that even if you're fearful, that that doesn't come over to the child because the child will pick it up. And I would say, because most likely, if your child's having them, so are you or your partner, because it's intergenerational. I mean, Joe and both, you know, AS, you know this.
Yes.
So it's going to trigger stuff in you, and because it may be relevant to you or your partner or whatever, because of the genetic, intergenerational nature of this, whatever your issues are around it, be informed. The first thing is to be as informed as possible. Get as much information about this as you possibly can. And also, if you are fearful, be careful what you read, because there are some books out there by certain researchers that are very fear-based and are very, and I think we have to be careful of what we call those that see themselves as authorities on this, because nobody knows all of it. There's no one who's got a mandate on this, and some of them have got a particular bias or perspective. So
yes.
If fear yourself, don't read fear-based books. Try and read broadly and trust that sort of sentence that says, this fits for me. So go with what fits for you, not what other people are telling you to believe. That, you know, this is about us trusting ourselves now and trusting that inner part of us that knows. And I'm really clear on that, is that part of us does know. Part of us knows what fits for us and what information actually is part of our experience. I have known many people come to me that said they've gone to UFO groups where they've had, you know, the experience of groups and what have you, and the whole energy's been one of fear. And all that's done is put them right off, and they just have not gone back because they said, that's not been my experience. And that's really important for them to honor that and realize that just because some people are at a point of fear with this doesn't mean that's your experience. That's where they're at. That's, and I'm not denying the fear side of this, and I'm not denying the trauma of this for many people. But, you know, it's important to say that every experience is unique to each soul. And for some people, that experience may be really scary, and it may not always be related, as Joe and you both, not always related to extraterrestrials either. It may very well be one of these darker covert programs than my lab. And I have to say, in the experience of groups that I left, the percentage of the most traumatized has always been the My Lab. The other ones may be scared still and fearful, but the ones that I have seen absolutely terrified have gone and related back to a My Lab experience.
Oh,
so
good.
Just really better. Important to say that.
Joe, I'm sure you have something to say about that as well.
Well, no, I agree with her wholeheartedly. It is. All the ones we deal with the most traumatic are the My Lab cases. That's what they are. And it's funny, too, because we brought this up so late in the show, but, you know, the My Lab abductions, you know, any researcher that's doing valid research, and this happens probably to one out of every three, start getting pushed. They'll try to push them out. If they've been picking them up, like if they're a contactee and they're a researcher and they've been being picked up, a lot of times they'll program them, aggravate them, all kind of little sorts of things, stuff I've been seeing over the years. Well, Starshine, we would have done a 3-hour show, but this is going to be a series, so it'll actually be 6 hours total, a little over 6 hours, actually. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying. You know, the MILAB thing, there's a couple of things about MILABs real quick. One, it proves that our governments don't know as much as we think they do, because there's no need to take as many contactees as they take. Also, they prefer to take contactees that have come out into the light and said, hey, I know this, that, this, and this, because, hey, you know, they got information that may actually help what they're doing. You know, when a contactee comes on the air and says, hey, you know, I've actually flown a ship, or I've played with this, or I've done like that, that's an automatic flag for a MILAB guy. He's thinking, oh, well, wait a minute, let's go, you know, pick this one up. So I always tell people, be very careful when you go public. You never know what kind of attention it's going to draw to you, and they're almost always the most traumatic of the cases. I mean, with the exception of maybe, you know, if you talk about when somebody says they've seen somebody eating somebody, other than that, by far they're the most traumatic. I mean, it just seems to be the way it is. But I know we're getting kind of short here.
Do I have one more?
Oh, no, yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say we could easily do 3 hours. The three of us wouldn't even be a big deal. But go ahead and do that, and what, there's something else? Oh, no, go ahead, and I'll come back in a minute, but go ahead and do that.
Okay, what advice, Mary, would you give parents to help their child in those situations, and perhaps a few do's and a few don'ts? We've kind of somewhat covered this as well, but perhaps you have something to add. Some do's and don'ts, and how do you help your child in this situation?
Well, the do's are getting as much information as you possibly can, be as informed as you can, and access that from wherever you can, in terms of those that you be very careful in don't, in who you access from psychological arena, because there'll be some that'll be open to this, there'll be a lot that will confront them, and you'll end up being very, very confused. So it's about checking if you do go and want support from someone from the psychological side of things, check them out first. Ask them a few questions. And I have stuff in my book, Awakening. I actually put down the things you need to ask if you want to access professional help. Find out how aware or how open a psychologist is, for example, or someone or a counselor, by asking a few succinct questions. And that is, you know, very easy to do. And it's about saying, you know, just, you don't even have to say your name to start with. Say, I just need to know where you're coming from. You know, do you believe there's, you know, life out there in the universe? If they say, oh, yeah, I think it's quite possible. Do you know anything about people who have experiences with contact, for example? And if they say, well, I have heard some stories and I'm quite interested in it, then you can take it from there. But you have to check people out first.
Absolutely.
Sorry, well, you got to protect yourself as well. I mean, you know, all of us are putting our reputations on the line when we start talking about this. And more so than that, and something a lot of researchers don't think about, you know, we're out on the road a lot of times. We go meet contactees in other cities all over the place. Mary's flying to other countries to meet him and stuff. Every time we do that, we're actually taking our own life in our own hands. I mean, talking to someone on the phone and talking to someone over the Internet and through email is great, and it does give you a sense of who the person is, but frankly, you never know until you actually meet them in person. There's always that little bit in the back of your head going, oh, should I have done this? That's why we always tell everybody, meet the public place. you know, meet the public place, bring as many witnesses that'll be happy. But it's hard because, you know, a lot of contactees want anonymity. They don't want to see people they don't know. And I have a personal problem, and I know Mary has this problem as well. A lot of the contactees only want to deal with you. It's a problem for me with the organization because a lot of times I try to refer contactees that I work because they're in different areas or things like that to other directors, and they don't want that. Once they identify with a particular person, they really, which is flattering, and I think it's great for the researchers, but then, frankly, it intensifies the workload, intensifies it a lot. And now, you know, ICAR is pushing, I don't know if you knew this, Mary, we're pushing to make 100,000 members by next summer. And we're well up over 30,000 now, so we're really pushing this hard. We've been actually keeping them everything. Once we broke 30,000, we've been keeping it a secret until we break 50, and which officially makes us, right now we're the world's largest UFO abduction organization in the world, but the Raelians, unfortunately, have 55,000 members. Even though they are a sex cult, they still are considered a UFO sex cult, so... We've got to get enough members to pass them, and then by far we're the largest UFO abduction organization on the planet by far. Right now, if you count them, we're second. If you don't count them, we're first, and plan on staying there. Because, you know as well as I do, the more you talk to, the more pieces of the puzzle you get, the more clearly all of this stuff is in your own personal head, and it helps you to help other people, because now you see in the bigger picture, and you can say, well, hey, I know why they're having this problem or that problem or this problem. You can show them shortcuts to getting their brain straight. It's like with children, you know. It's one of the reasons we started this weird project about the Greys, the reptilians, the humans, the blood types, different other projects we're running. I think there's 10 of them right now that are going to be ongoing for as long as the organization exists, is so that we can identify people who don't know their contactees. Just people that may, for some reason, visit the site and fill out a questionnaire or ask some questions, you know, it's never going to guarantee that somebody's a contactee, but it will eliminate a lot. I got it. And lately, that's something else I wanted to ask you. If you get a chance, when you're talking with your group and stuff, do me a favor, get a list of their blood types. You don't have to send me names or anything like that. I don't need any of that. All I need is sex and blood type. That's it. To add to the study, because I finally got all the famous contactees down, along with other, I think it's over like 4,000 abductees and contactees have participated in the blood type study now. Over 10,000 people have participated, but we're only looking for the contactees. And it's amazing what direction this has gone in. It just amazes the living daylights out of me. But in case anybody writes in or wants to send hate mail or anything, every blood type is abducted. Some more so than others, but every blood type and every eye color is abducted. Plain and simple, easiest way I can say it. But there are two mutations in both eye color and in blood that ET tends to prefer. I don't know if they bred that way originally in family line or if they actually bred this into us in the family line. Because you got to remember, O negative wasn't even around after more than 25,000 years. So you got to wonder, maybe they bled it in. I don't know. It's weird. Not going to get into that either. Apologize for going in that weird direction. But anyway, I know we're getting late. What else we got, AS? I want to make sure we cover everything we need to see.
Well, I mean, it's so fascinating speaking with you both. I could go on for a long time, but I know we'll have more shows coming. So I think we did great. I think this is going to be very, very interesting for people. So what do you have anything else, Mary, that you'd like to...
What to conclude with, I mean, I guess...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, you broke up there for a minute.
Okay. Yeah, are we actually now concluding this particular one?
Yeah, I think pretty much, right, Joe?
We're meandering our way out here, Mary, over the next 10, 15 minutes, nice and relaxed and comfortable.
Yeah, you can still add things that if you want to on, Mary, but we're on our way out slowly, I guess.
Yeah.
One of the things I will say to you, Joe, that I think is important is what I've actually started up with a CERN is what I call ABC, which is a CERN Buddy Connect. And because, like you, I have become so busy with emails every day trying to, support as many people as possible, it gets to a point where really all they want to do is talk to another experiencer and that's not always possible where they're located. So in each state now, I've got a few experiencers that are really stable, comfortable with their experiences, happy to be on the end of the phone every now and again to someone who's just opening up to their own encounters and just would like someone to talk to who can say, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And I vet them. I check them out in terms of where they're at, where they're coming from, et cetera, et cetera. And it's working quite well. I mean, it's still in its infancy. But I would like to see that go global. I would like to see experiences supporting experiences. You know, the ones that are in a good place that are happy occasionally to take a phone call or whatever.
No, I'll just ignore that. Don't worry about that. That's just one of the lines coming in with us. Because actually, Mary, any way I can help you with that, just let me know, because it is something we've been talking about. You know, we have online support groups and we have local groups at different directors, hosts and stuff. But we have been talking about this for a while. It's an excellent idea. I mean, having contactees host other contactees, the buddy system is a great thing. It works across the board. So if you got any ideas on how we can help you or how we can even get involved with you, my phone number and my email. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it would be lovely if we could have this globally. Ultimately, you know, I get emails from Finland, you know, Spain, Germany, Holland, Russia, right across what I'm saying, is there anyone else local to me that I could talk to? And this has been the big one for me is, who can I connect them with? Someone that is actually in the same language as them, rather than me trying to do the Google Translate and all this. If we can start something off that is, contact buddy support. I mean, I call it Peace for Australia, which is, a CERN buddy support, or Buddy Connect, I call it. Keep it really simple. But people are in a good place, like you, for example, AS, a bit of time every now and then. Some of them are retirees that have been going up with their encounters, are in a really good place with it, quite happy to be on the end of a phone every now and again to somebody. So it's not always, if you've got a few in one state, everyone's not going to be, you know, and bombarded, because there'll be two or three options, for example. I've actually got a gentleman here who's the coordinator of that now. So I just say, look, there's someone who wants to be a buddy support. Then I just say, right, I've got someone in your locale who'd really like to talk with you. And you know, they either give their email or they give their phone number or mobile or whatever it is. And basically they get on with it. Unless something else comes up, then it's, you know, because people are having ongoing encounters. Something happened last night, I'll get an email, this happened or that happened, you know. They can talk to somebody who has had similar things. It's so affirming that they feel so supported and less isolated. And it's amazing the difference it makes for them to feel connected to a few people that understand.
Oh, absolutely. And we're, so we can find this, I mean, people can find this on your website?
We're actually updating my CERN website at the moment. Everybody connect. These are things that I've got organized. So anyone that is in a good place and that would like to offer support, and it'd be great if we had that across the U.S. You know, in every state you have half a dozen or whatever people that are in a good place with their experiences. But I, you know, the thing is, I do vet them. It's important that they're not only in a good, stable place with this, they're not, I say, you're not there to impose your beliefs. You're not there to tell people how to interpret their experiences. You're there to listen, actively listen, and, you know, okay, share if you had a similar experience. But it's up to the person to interpret their experiences in the way that's most helpful to them. That is the crucial thing, because you know there are some that have their own mandate and think that theirs is the only mandate. And
absolutely.
That's the problem.
Well, that's great. Mary, that would be something I might be able to add a link to on my website, on Cosmic U. So people who are having, we actually have an abduction support group there on Cosmic U as well. So, you know, there's a between ICAR and ASCERN and Cosmic U and, you know, other places, I think there's a lot of support available now. So anybody having experiences, don't be shy. You can definitely find people to speak with openly and without judgment. So don't hesitate.
A couple of groups. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. No, I was just thinking of the three groups you were talking about. And really, there's one or two other groups that I know of out there. There's one that that Sasha works with in the UK, which for some reason the name is going right out of my head. And then the one that Yvonne Smith hosts out in California. But there's a new group in California now, too. One of our junior directors got a wise idea, started a meetup group out there, and has it up to 75 people meeting monthly now, all apparently contactees. So that's interesting in itself. So we're all about finding contactees. I do really think there's only five or six that are really good groups that I would consider reputable around the planet. And I think there needs to be more. And I think thanks to some new friends, you know, because, you know, a lot of my exopolitic friends follow Mary and I and a few others very closely on both abductions and on MILAB stuff. So they're actually been pitching in, you know, because they all got a big following in exopolitic. I know there's a big argument on what's what in exopolitics. That's why I stay out of that part. But still, you know, there's a big following. And Mary, you're on Michael Sollers' advisory board too, aren't you?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, because I know we're both on his board, and it's, you know, better. I'm not going to argue it's getting better, but frankly, since we've come up with a much larger number of contactees, there's just not enough of us. And I notice now that the awakening, since there seems to be help for the people going through the awakening, more and more people are willing to take that chance now. Hey, you know, I don't want to go public. I don't want to be a radio or TV star, but I would like to talk about this and know what's going on in my life. And that has been a refreshing change. I think, I'm not sure if abductions haven't passed up sightings in the last few years, which is good. And then there's the old hard-headed groups that, frankly, are scared of alien abduction. I'm thinking, why are you a UFO research group if you're scared of alien abductions, or if you're going to do it haphazardly? It still bothers me.
That's funny.
And well, because there's so many of them out there that just do things so haphazardly that, you know, when you're doing abduction research, it's kind of just, you know, you're messing with somebody's mind, their lives, who they are.
I mean, it's as easy to do harm as it is to do good.
Well, somebody's going to be driving those ships, right?
They are. But, ladies and gentlemen, you can get picking right up the UFO on the cover site. Just click it on the left side. You'll see the picture of the book right there. Bam, wham, man. Takes you right to the site, no problem. You can always click on on Nellie herself, and I'll take you right to her personal site. And she's easy to find. The emails are easy to find. You can visit AS over at Cosmic U. Of course, you can always find me here on Wednesday night hosting UFO Undercover. Or you can write to me. By the way, I want to apologize up front because I am probably right now, I should say this in the air, I'm probably right now about a month and a half behind on my emails. If you don't have the personal email, I'm at least a month and a half behind, maybe 2 months. So I know I've even had some guest appearances that I've got to answer back and stuff like that. It's just I've been real busy, and the boss man has been making me work lately. He doesn't always make me work, but now he's like, you got to get out there and get to work, buddy. You've been goofing off too much. So I'm just grateful I got an understanding partner in those areas. Mary, great job as always. I mean, I had a fantastic time tonight. You always do a fantastic job. AS, you've been getting better and better. You're going to be a great host one of these days if we can ever get her to come host for us. A couple of quick things. I got a couple other people on the line with me before I go and introduce y'all to Patrice.
Indeed I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, Coach, y'all don't know it. AS, this is Patrice, our DC director, also host of the Global Focus. Mary, I think you've met Patrice before. Somewhere along. Have y'all met Patrice?
Yes, I've had the pleasure of interviewing Mary probably about two or three years ago.
I was thinking about that. And then I have my other paranormal friends. I want to these people believe in ghosts, y'all. Oh, my God. Chris, Stephanie, you with us?
Yes, we are.
We're here. And this is Chris and Stephanie from Second Sight NYC, and Chris does Insight, and Stephanie will be joining me on a new show on August 4th. We'll be starting. It's weekly on Saturdays. Oh, by the way, that show will not be broadcasted live on FM. It will be broadcasted live on all of our other venues but the FM station. The FM will get pre-recorded because, frankly, some of the topics we're going to be talking about, I don't know if I might not slip. So so we're going to keep this show.
Psychically, I'm seeing that you're going to slip a few times, yeah. Joe.
So, you know, and I'm sure in the second hour when we're letting callers come in and comment about what we were talking about, I think. Y'all should have Mary on your show. She's great. Who was I going with? Oh, Therese, what are we doing Friday night? Sorry, I got sidetracked again.
I just wanted to note, what a wonderful interview there, Joe, A.S., and Mary Rodwell. Very, very informative. Joe, I'll be in Massachusetts and D.C. this coming week. I'm going to return with broadcast in August. August 3rd, hopefully Timothy Good on the 3rd. August 10th, Alejandro Rojas. August 17th, Craig Lang. And August 24th, Nick Redfern. And I'm sorry I'll miss Second Sight NYC tomorrow. Great week, everyone.
Oh, that's right. I was forgetting you were traveling. See, that's what happens when your brain gets old like that.
I'm just very busy. I can understand that.
Yes. Chris, Steph, what y'all up to?
Well, tomorrow night we have Thomas Fusco on, and he's the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil.
Yeah, I've been reading the book. I'll tell you what, it's something else. It's there's a lot of... He looks at the paranormal and everything metaphysical in a completely different way, and I think the people actually love it. So we got a really good agenda worked up for the show, and we're excited about it.
He also has a high blood pressure Second Sight Church of Second Sight for us tomorrow night. I know that it's coming.
I've been working up all day. Linda saw, you know, on Facebook what's been going on, so I've been working myself up for tomorrow, so it should be good. As always.
Just wait till Stephanie and I do our first show, and I get to talk about you-know-who talking about how he equals small businesses in the United States. I can't even wait for that. Oh, my God, I can't even wait for that one. But you know, there's a bunch of other stuff we'll be talking about that night, too. That's just one of many topics.
Joe, you got to verify something for me. Stephanie told me that somebody wrote into you, and they wanted to see me in a belly dancing outfit. Is this true?
Yes, and they even had a pink stone for your belly button. I am not kidding.
What the hell is this?
I'm laughing so hard when I seen this email.
I can't make this stuff up. I told him this, and he looked at me like I was insane, and I thought, at all the things I can make up, this is not one.
I mean, come on. I mean, I'm like a guy's guy. I don't do belly dancing.
She said something about paying money to see it, so I gave her your email.
Oh, Jesus.
She said, what do you think he won, 105? I said, I don't know. I think he won more than that. I said, well, is it going to be a private show, or will this be on the internet? Well, it's going to be on the internet. I said, well, I don't know if you can afford that.
Oh, Jesus.
What are we becoming?
I don't know, but we get some weirdos right in, which, you know, it's fun, and... You know, a bunch of people have been harping on us about doing that other show, which I'll think about in the future, but it's just been crazy. Poor Mary's thinking, what the hell are they getting me in? She's like, who are these strange people that like, come on the air with them, all of us?
Get used to it. We're not going anywhere.
Next week, busy week, because, Chris, your show is on Friday night.
Excellent.
We'll be on.
So, don't forget to plug the up-and-coming panel show.
Oh, yeah, but we're excited about that. We put together a panel show with most of the hosts from UFO Paranormal Radio. We have us, we have Joe Montaldo, we have Treese, we have Chip and Nicole from Mind Cemetery, we have
Jeffrey Pritchard.
It's going to be like a round table. We're going to talk about everything. It's
that'll
be
August 23rd, and it will be for 3 hours, and it'll be in the Second Sight Thursday slot. So it would be 8 to 11 Eastern time and so on and so forth.
That should be interesting. Joe, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, it should be a blast. It actually should be a blast. A lot of good hosts on there. It should be a lot of fun. Especially, you know, because we got some hosts on this station, especially them women. Damn. We can't ever shut them up. Ain't that the truth? They never shut up, no matter what you do. You're like, shut up. And they're like, da 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 da. Hey,
Joe, you
I'm going to get email for months now.
Joe, you hear our show. I can barely get a word in with Stephanie around.
Oh, please. I am the
I
most
know,
polite.
Man. She never shuts up, ever. I mean, I do
have an opinion, you know, Steph? I mean, really.
You know, he better watch out I don't put my belly dancing costume on and put it on the internet.
Oh, Jesus.
That'll shut him up.
Listen, that video stays in the bedroom.
That will shut him up, okay?
Oh, Jesus.
Right there, like a Band-Aid. Right off.
the strange things we do on radio. I thank God it's not television. It's all I got to say. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of stuff upcoming in the next couple of weeks. A lot of good shows coming, a lot of specials. Don't forget to come back and check out. We're going to be doing a trilogy. As soon as I know what the dates are, when I talk to Mary and AS, I will let everybody know when the next two shows will be up and running. Hopefully real soon, y'all can come check it out. And because technically these are live shows, but you know, in the old days, and like the stuff AS and I just finished, those were all pre-records that you happened to catch live. Well, that's what was going on tonight, because this is going to be on YouTube. This is basically a pre-record y'all got to sit in and listen to before it got put on a thing. And then actually, I'm not sure if we didn't break a record tonight, so I'll have to check. I've been noticing the servers have been really, really, really good. I don't know who's on next, but I hate to give them this big audience for free. Anyway, guys and girls, we're going to get out of here. Mary, again, thanks for being on with me tonight. I think you did a fabulous job. You're always a wealth of information. AS, I'll be talking to you real soon. Stephanie,
yeah.
Chris, Therese, guys, you know I love y'all. I'll be talking to y'all real soon. Therese, I'll be looking forward to when you get back. Let me know how your trip goes. You always pop me a line. Stephanie, Chris, looking forward to the show tomorrow night. See what kind of trouble. Oh, and I have sound effects now, y'all, so y'all better be careful.
Oh, no. Thank you for warning us,
thank
Jeff.
You, I now have sound effects, and it is on, okay? We're going to demonstrate right quick. Let's see here. This is one for my paranormal friend.
That sounds like me at night.
I was just going to say, that sounds like Chris.
Anyway, y'all, we got applause and everything now. So, Joe, we dangerous in the queue. Poor Chip and Nicole the other night didn't know what was going on. All right, I'm evil. Anyway, okay. Guys, thanks for everyone tuning in tonight. I had a fantastic time. It's going to be a great show.
Thank you.
Let you know. I'll be back in a minute to talk to the virtual auditorium, but we got to talk a couple of things on the thing on the line. Guys, as soon as the other shows are up, I'll let you know. As soon as AS posts it to YouTube, I will also let y'all know that. I imagine the show will do quite well. Mary, like I said, Mary's always a wealth of information. On that note, we're going to blow out of here, guys. And thanks again for listening. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Actually, in Australia, good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Are we off the air?
lines of what they were trying to tell, you know, me when we were there, is that we're about to enter a period or a cycle where we line up the Earth and the Sun. Exactly where it was. So they described the property of the supermassive black hole before anyone could ever know what the properties of the supermassive black hole was, and they told you, and they pretty much figured out where it was too, which is just it's beyond. you either have to accept that there was a super civilization that existed long before the ones that we have today, and they got their knowledge from there, or they'll tell you they got this information from the Pleiadians, from beings from the Pleiades, which is what they tell you. They will tell you flat out, it's not a big secret. There's YouTube interviews with Don Alejandro or yet. So to understand, you know, if we just accept it at face value and just say, okay, you know, we don't really have another explanation as to where they got this super science from. If they somehow had some interaction with some extraterrestrials who had this knowledge, then that would certainly explain where it came from. And I think that's exactly what happened.
I'm still a little bit confused here, because if they know when this Bakhtin cycle zeroes out to start over, then they can simply wind it backwards to get it started.
But again, they don't know when. You can't know what the end date is unless you know the exact start date. So the dates that have been thrown out there are estimates by Western scholars.
So yeah, but this Mayan calendar, the great Bakhtin calendar, it can visibly wind down to zero. I mean, they can look at it and see when it hits zero.
They did have the concept of zero.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back with that discussion and more right after this.